This is Art Moves. Art Moves is a series of curated conversations at the intersection of art, innovation, and social justice.
Each week, we'll be talking with the innovative thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts or redefining what it means to be creative.
I'm Tony Williams.
And I'm Eli Koslansky.
And we're your host for Art Moves.
Now, Eli, you have been more excited than ever about these two guests and the work that they've been doing.
Yeah. One, because it's a good friend of mine, and the production itself is amazing and unique. I think you sort of mentioned that it was a mashup between her, Blade Runner, and My Dinner with Andre.
But, you know, that's exactly right. But why don't we could just give them a little intro? We have KB Miller, and we have Teresa Tunney.
Hello.
Thank you both for joining. And there's a little secret, and maybe it's not a secret, but it's a secret to our listeners because they don't know you necessarily. But both of you have really interesting great-grandparents.
Well, New York will know him because he built a music hall and 67 public libraries for the city of New York.
That's
Andrew
fantastic.
Carnegie.
Oh, Andrew Carnegie. Wow, that's fantastic. And Teresa, you have a little story for us as well.
Anything
it's not a little story. It's a great story.
Well, I've got a couple. How about that?
Keep going.
Well, I'm related to Kenneth through my great-grandfather, who was George Lauder. They were first cousins in Scotland and came over and did a little business together. And George's descendant married Jean Tunney, who was an Irish boxer from Greenwich Village and who became a heavyweight champion. So,
oh, wow.
Yes.
So how do those legacies feel, people?
Good question.
Yeah.
How does it feel? Good question.
Feel?
You've got a legacy too.
Oh, yes, I do.
Yes, I do.
My great-great-grandfather was the superintendent of the Citadel, but that's for another show because I can't wait to dig into that. But for this show, let's talk a little bit about libraries. What do you think your great-grandfather would be saying now with the assault that we're seeing on our library system?
Interestingly, the original contract for the 67 libraries included hours of operation.
Interesting.
Those
are always getting cut, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So six days a week, 12 hours a day, is 72 hours a week. And the current average for the New York Public Libraries is more like 57 or so. So somewhere there's 25% of the access to public libraries in New York sort of missing from the equation. So it's something to consider. It's something for you know, Tony Marks and the mayor to work out. But it's definitely something to consider that the intent was that public access for as many hours as are reasonable.
Exactly. And, you know, and so many libraries today are also community centers. Because I was on the board of the Brooklyn Public Library, and we had so many kids there for after-school programs. So the library is a place where we go to really experience democracy by being able to educate ourselves, right?
It's a gateway to other worlds, right?
Exactly.
And I had the privilege of knowing Ann Donenkorp, who was a good New Yorker, but went to run the Philadelphia Museum. And she told me that she managed every exhibit that was done there, as every painting, every object in the exhibit was posted and put out as if it would change the life of a person who was seeing it.
Because It has that power.
And obviously so does one book, right?
Right. Reading can change the way you're thinking about something.
Exactly.
Right?
So it's very much about access, and it's very much about the role that that the libraries play in the community. They're not objects, after all. They are dwellings. We live there, and what you bring to the library has an impact on what you find. What you find has an impact on how you live. And so lives are changed.
It's about developing intelligence. See, that seems like
it was actually a family value. Yes,
right?
It is. That's right.
A family value.
Well, education creates an environment where you can have choice.
Exactly.
So if you don't understand your options, then you don't have the ability to choose. You're always in a state of response or state of reaction. So, and libraries, which is also why we started the podcast, is purely democratic. It shows no judgment to the person that walks in. And it's so, it's breathtaking because each book is its own universe. And it allows the viewer to experience their own imagination. And so you can't do that with a TV in the same way. And we're not taught.
No, you can't pour yourself in. You can pour yourself into a book.
Pour.
What you're doing on television, you're not interacting necessarily. You're watching. You're spectating. Right. You're spectating.
Well, they asked Andrew Carnegie why he did it. And he said the library was the best possible gift for a community since it gave people the opportunity to improve themselves. It's also the most used cultural institution of any. Absolutely. So the demographics that go to the library is across the board. But you know what? Let's also talk about artificial intelligence.
Go right ahead, fella. Do your thing.
So you've created this really amazing vehicle, this amazing piece called Spark Hunter, and it's about artificial intelligence. And we thought we'd start off a little bit about just because not everybody knows about artificial intelligence unless they're sleeping under a rock. But there's a lot of things around it. Like, for example, you know, why would you say that AI is prevalent today, more prevalent today? Is that because it advances technology or people's use of it or?
It's certainly about the advance in the technology. You know, Ray Kurzweil put a name to it, I guess, with the singularity. But the power and computational power of these machines is growing at approximately doubling, you know, every 18 to 24 months. And it's hard to imagine even that means that they're going to get 100 times more powerful every 10 years or so. And it's hard to imagine even what 10 years of computational increase, what 100% means. We don't even have the words to define it because we don't have the, you know, it's not part of our domain of experience.
Yeah. And this isn't even technologists too. They can't, they wouldn't know even what
and, the problem. And that's the way it's been for the last 70 years. Ernest Becker said in Denial of Death back in 1974, that won the Pulitzer, he said that we plan, but we can also see the future of our own demise, right? We can see our own mortality. And in seeing our own mortality, we set up a tension between the process of wanting to survive that we're evolutionarily programmed for and the fact that we're mortal. And that tension gives us existential anxiety. And so it's natural that there's a lot of anxiety with regard to the uncertainty of the future that we're creating with AI.
Interesting. So we're the only creature on the planet that's cognizant of its own mortality, right? But you also talk about singularity, too. You mentioned it. So not everybody knows what that is. It'd be great to, like, just mention, you know, I know what it is, but.
No, it would be good to know, right?
Yeah, good to know.
Sure.
Yeah.
So generally it refers, scientists, I believe, as I understand it, use it to refer to the time when computers will be, when AI, artificial intelligence, will be smart enough to learn and advance on its own past a level of normal human intelligence, general human intelligence. That's why it's often referred
to
as
Armageddon AGI. It's not the Armageddon. No, but I'm listening to that. This is where it's going to pass human intelligence. That's real. That's a scary notion in a way.
Of course, in many respects, it's already passed human intelligence, right? But AGI, we haven't experienced yet, artificial general intelligence. And in particular, emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. We haven't yet seen a machine that has true understanding or emotional intelligence. But we will. It's coming. And so, and there's a lot of talk, obviously, about what that will mean. And there's many people have expressed fear about that.
AI is not something that I think about every day.
Sheila,
it's ubiquitous. It's ubiquitous, you know?
No,
it's in everything. So I'm not thinking about it. But we have an essence that I don't think a machine can create. It is that part of us that there's no not yet. We'll never. Well, you say never say never.
I say never, never.
I believe that God is. I believe in God.
Right, right.
And I believe that God is like salt in a recipe. There's right. no getting it out.
Right.
It
well, how do you know God's you. Not right. in the machine?
It is in you. There can be ego in a machine. I feel that God is so omnipresent, yeah. omniscient.
Yep.
And there's just we can't be that.
So
we can't be that. Sorry. We don't even know what's on in different universes. We don't know what's on other planets. We don't know what's out there in this massive universe. So why would we think that we, man, with all of our frailties.
Right, right, right.
Frailties. Right. We
this
are
is
frail.
What the show is
you know?
Amazing because it deals right, with all right, these issues.
Right.
So.
Right. See, I got passionate about it. See, this is where, but thank this, you, T. But this you is, got us where we need to be, T.
And I would, but this I would just question. Add to that that we don't even have to go outside to get to that mystery, because the mystery is a question that's been asked for at least 2,500 years. And that's, you know, what is human consciousness? And we don't yet have a real definition or an understanding of the mechanism of consciousness. Right. And so the divine mystery is within us in addition to being outside.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM.
I see that Teresa, also known as T, has something that she'd like to add to this. Let's keep going, Teresa.
I just wanted to say that your response and your desire to express your concerns, right, is exactly the conversation we should be having instead of AI is going to destroy the world. Because what we have been culturally taught up to this moment is the Terminator.
Right.
Right.
So
right.
We don't know. We're just at the baby breath of just beginning to have these conversations. And part of the curve that we need to get into as a culture is to have the conversation. That's part of it, to break. We address certain things in the podcast, right? And we address the core takeaway, which we'll talk about, that all things have standing. There's steps that we took using philosophy and psychology to get there that talk about the other. So the other is a concept that's out in the world.
Oh, yeah.
That's
right. About the mind. You talk about the mind, too, about having a different processing for people who are the same as the other.
Exactly. Yeah, and so we break that down to even address your concern, what you just said, which is how do you incorporate all the pieces without it being good and bad? Because we're culturally taught good and bad. Right. This is me. I don't like that. So that's bad. So that doesn't exist. Right. So even in our little conversation right now, we've just used those ideas of good and bad to discuss what your concerns are.
Right. The lack of values, perhaps.
Right. Right.
In an AI. And also, who develops it? And the biases that are in there. So I'm real also, concerned about bias.
Yeah. It's also a lack of understanding because AI understands nothing, right? But I have one comment about the question.
You want to respond to what he just said there,
no,
too?
No.
I have one comment about the other question.
Oh, he wants to
well,
get
there's
in
another
now.
Question people have been asking for 2,500 years, which is where's the bathroom? And the other thing I wanted to say is that, okay, you say that it's not sentient. AI is not sentient. But what happens when they start developing something like biochips? Where this amalgam of human, whatever it is, and silicon. Now we're in a different ball game.
Break that down a little bit more, though, because I don't know if our viewers,
well,
our listeners,
that
are going to understand what was just said.
This well, now a, you have medical devices inside people's
okay,
bodies
that
are attached
right?
to attached to the to organs and stuff, and electrical mm-hmm. signals of it, and mm-hmm. computerized, and there are mm-hmm. sensors and mm-hmm. other things about it. But on the flip side, what happens if you start having chips that are made from DNA or something like that?
Mm.
What is that? Then all of a sudden this is out the window. And then the question is God an AI or something?
Part of the conversation has been about
it's going to be on the test.
How to align AI with human values. That's it's called the alignment
right.
problem.
You talked about right.
That's going to be interesting because
yeah.
who's doing the aligning?
And some who's doing
Joe,
the aligning?
Joe's
and,
doing the aligning.
And to what?
From Christ.
Right? And whose values are you aligning it to?
There you go. who well, this values, is important what issue. Values.
But even if you put aside the idea of what the values would be, and maybe humanity, you know, if you followed Shannon Valor, our ethicist in the companion piece for Spark Hunter, incredible. Which is All Things Have Standing, brilliant AI ethicist from the UK who believes that we need a universal ethics that's in her mind possibly a mashup of the great ethical systems of humanity that have been developed through history. And she lays out how that might be done in a discussion of what values are inherent in those systems, what they have in common, and how we could begin to understand them. But the point of her work in Technology and the Virtues is that we need a virtuous system in place to begin to talk about the ethical issues involved in the development and implementation.
And whose voices would we be listening to when we create these kinds of systems? You see a lot. Yeah, that would be my main concern.
It's a good question. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It also has to be international.
It's the question.
You bet. And it's actually more than in our minds, Therese and I, in our minds, it's more than the voices of humanity that need to be listened to. We're kind of getting ahead of it here,
why don't we go into it? You think this is a time for us to listen to the clip, you think?
Sure.
Yeah.
The main takeaway for Spark Hunter is that all things have standing. All things have ethical standing. And it's an idea that's an elegant idea that in my world was first proposed by Sylvia Benso, this brilliant American-Italian philosopher who did a mashup of the two great thinkers of the 20th century, Levinas and Heidegger, 19th and 20th. And what she says is that she took the philosophy of one, which was a philosophy of things with no ethics in it, and the other, which was a philosophy of ethics, but only for humanity. And she did a mashup of them and proposed an ethics of things. Her book is called The Face of Things. Everything, by virtue of its ontology, of its being, of its very being, by virtue of that being, creates an ethical space around it. And we enter that ethical space.
You talk about that in
only yes. in deference. It's in the podcast, and it's in our companion piece, All Things Have Standing, which is at like, you know, it's 10 hours of video programming or podcast that if you're interested in the issues raised by Spark Hunter, you can dive into, you know, a deeper discussion.
I think it should be in classrooms, quite honestly. But you know what we're going to do? We're going to go into the clip so that folks can know exactly what we're talking about from a Spark Hunter perspective. Okay.
And what have I learned? That I identify with imbecility and ignorance?
You have the ability to have compassion, even for him.
Bull! I'm leaving.
No, sit down. Sit down.
Father Time, under no circumstances can she leave this room.
You can't just point to one thing. It's a series of things.
I want to scream.
Then scream.
Six, you ready to take her out?
Stop. Do not engage.
Oh. Will you folks just please move away from the fireplace? The robo-vacuum will take care of the glass.
Report, Shadow. This may be normal in your world, but you will be dealing with an official inquiry.
So we've just heard a clip from Spark Hunter, and the robot... I had a moment. That's what I recall.
Yes, she did.
She had a moment. She did. And she released some energy, and she kind of shattered some glass. Talk to us about that, if you wouldn't mind, KB or Teresa, either one of you.
One thing we could talk about is you've just used the term robot. Yeah, we debated.
Yeah. I'm sorry. She's not a robot.
Was that disrespectful?
Not calling her a robot?
No, it's a very. It's brilliant. You bring it up. We talk about this.
Yes, in the writers' room. I mean, you know, as we were writing it, we're debating the issue. You know, machine, robot.
Could you get a perfect spouse this way?
You know, the word robot came from a play written by a Czech named Kepek, I think. And the word robot actually meant slave.
Hmm.
So we're reluctant to call her a robot, even though she calls herself a robot in Spark Hunter. And so... Even when we're talking about her, we debate whether
to use the word. There's no new word.
So we call her our hero or our being.
We could create a new word today.
You sure could.
Oh, right?
Sure,
definitely could. Eli, thoughts?
Actually, I'm sitting here and says, oh, there might be like a robot discrimination league in there.
There will be one day.
We definitely think there will be.
She was a scary, not a scary creature. She was a fool. I did. I liked her. I liked when she was on the mountaintop. Can you talk to us about that mountaintop experience she had in Morocco? What she was going through with the ark.
Right.
Do you remember the mountaintop?
We're not sure how much, because there's some spoilers here we don't want to.
Oh, true.
No, that's fine.
Okay. Spoiler territory.
Yeah, her first trip in the storytelling that she does with her maker over dinner to try to work out her psychological problems is her trip to southern France, which then led her to Morocco. And in Morocco, she's on a quest with a British anthropologist to find the Ark, the landing of the biblical Ark. And she makes it to the top of the mountain in the southern High Atlas, where some people thought actually was a possible landing place. And how would you describe her moment with the music and the...
She saw colors.
And I was wondering what kind of
experience was she having? Because it is consciousness. But during one of our conversations in the past, I was like, but can a robot meditate? Can it be at peace and hear from a higher consciousness? Can that be programmed in an entity like that?
I'll call her a being. It's a learning system.
Is it a learning system?
The way AI works is that you program certain parameters and then you have a learning set. And the system learns on it, so actually it's improving as it's moving through the learning set.
The concern is when everyone's talking about is when it starts learning off that set. So it's doubling back on itself. So one of our main conceits is that she needs to learn in the world. She has to go out. She's set up with a goal, which is kind of...
to find a workable virtue ethics for humanity.
So that's her goal.
She's got a lofty goal.
But it's an important goal.
I like her.
It's not about making paperclips. It's about looking for morality.
Ethics.
Right, ethics.
How are we going to move through this life not hurting, not doing no harm to people? How do we move through life, right?
So even just starting, and as writers, imagining a being from that point, stepping out into the world. So now she has information. We gave her the learning set, and she goes out into the world. So on the mountaintop is her first experience where, because of the altitude, she experiences the visuals of a wide world and also the intricacies of being in the moment. And the tension of those two experiences create something new.
So we're seeing the something new evolve. She's evolving. She's evolving as a being.
As a being. So
I said a robe-being.
So exactly. I like it. Robe-being. But what's interesting for us is that new thing she learns is not programmed. It's not a programmed thing. She learns it on her own. It is a result of this core goal. So she is evolving and she's questioning her own experience. And that is healthy.
Yes, it. We should all do that.
Healthy experience,
so to speak. Right. Right.
And so when we look at the robot, just even for that step, for us as storytellers and us as artists who want to present a new idea or an idea that will make you think, which is why I said, what do you think? Because also the way we're educated, getting back to libraries, is very black and white. Mm-hmm. So we wanted her to have an experience that was not, that was based in technology, that was based in the real things of how a Robine is created, right? That also allows her own expression that is, that she then questions. And then she, in the next step she goes on, she builds on that question.
So that gives, that's why she wants standing then, right? Because she's, am I
That's a very
there?
Good question.
If all things have standing, then all things need to have voice. If we listen carefully to the voice of this thing, where it came from, how the earth was changed by virtue of it being made, how it was brought to this place at this particular time, and how the lives of the people and the earth was changed by virtue of bringing it here.
The glass roof.
And how all of our lives were changed by virtue of taking a sip from this cup.
Right.
You know, what How all of that is an infinity, a vast infinity of stories, if you will, about the being of that thing. The word thing, you know what it means? The word thing actually comes from the German, and it means gathering.
Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm. Isn't that wonderful?
Interesting.
And we interpret that to mean a gathering of stories. That vast infinity is unknowable. We can never in a lifetime have a complete understanding of that, but we can aspire to hearing it more than we do, to listening more carefully by virtue of knowing about it, how it affects us, and beginning to answer some of those questions.
It's clearly about appreciation in a lot of ways, just really appreciating everything. But you know what? We've got a wrap. And I want you all to come back one. Yeah, we do, because we didn't even scratch the surface.
We're just warming up.
Yes, I mean, I think it's really interesting, especially to high schoolers. You know, putting it in some sort of curriculum to get people to start to think, expose folks to it this way. But that's all the time we have.
I should say where it's available, where people can listen to Spark Country, right? It's available on all the different services, yes?
It is. Yeah. Yes, pretty much everywhere you listen to podcasts.
Thank you so much, KB Miller and Teresa Tunney, T-Tunney.
Art Moves is co-produced by Brick Arts Media and pre-recorded at Brick Studio in downtown Brooklyn.
This has been Art Moves with your hosts, Tony Williams and Eli Kozlansky. Find some art that moves you and share it with someone.